They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WEBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights. On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Joining us today, we have my good friend and yours, if you live in Florida, well, even if you don't live in Florida, Julio.
I'm here.
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Perfectly.
All right. Julio Robaina, a former legislator, one of the best legislators ever in Florida, still working. And he's always, always, always been on the side of the homeowner. Can I tell you why he's been on the side of the homeowner? Because he actually listens to the homeowner. He's been going down there and he's been talking to all the homeowners for years. He even set up, and you're going to have to help me with this one, Julio, because I don't remember what it was called. It's what happens when you get to be a little old lady, but you chew, darling. He set up an organization, a group, that protected, that gave the homeowners someplace to go, someplace to get help, someplace to get some oversight. And that whole thing was set up to protect the homeowners and to protect their homes. But like all wonderful ideas, it was taken down. And I don't think it exists anymore. But for some reason, Julio, they've all gone back to Julio. Julio, what should we do now? And I can't reach him. He is so busy. He's so tied up with everything. And Julio, when you're that good, you're going to be tied up.
But and I appreciate that comment, but, you know, it's sad that we are tied up as a result of a casualty that happened here in South Florida, which took the lives of many, many individuals. So that's the saddest part about the whole thing, that it did take the lives of these individuals. So as a result of that, we are now in high demand because, as you know, government likes to do what I call knee-jerk reactions to problems instead of being proactive. They are reactive in nature. And that's one of the things that, as you were mentioning, is currently happening here in South Florida.
Do we know what caused the collapse? You know, there was a lot of speculation at first. It's, oh, they didn't have the reserves, they didn't have the reserves. Well, not having the reserves did not cause the collapse. Something caused the collapse. Do we know what it was, Julio?
Well, we do not know what it was, but because that is yet to be, you know, studied by all the experts and structural engineers and stuff that have to figure that out. But one of the things that we've already kind of all known for a while led to the demise of that building and the collapse of the building is the lack of maintenance and the lack of attention that should have been given to a building that was clearly identified to have some structural deficiencies in the way of a report that was done by structural engineers 2 years prior to this tragedy. You have, that is basically amounting to negligence on behalf of the board, the association, and included in that will be the property manager and even the law firm that should have given legal advice to those board members who, remember, in Florida, they're volunteers. And
that's all over the country.
On information from the professionals, meaning legal issues, it's law firm that represents them, and managerial side, the property managers, which are licensed people that know what needs to be done in these situations. So there's no excuse that that this, what appears to be negligence, should have happened 2 years ago. They should have acted on it. They should have, as soon as they had a structural engineer's report in their hand. Like I said, I'm being repetitive now. An attorney for the association and a property manager should have told them, hey, board members, stop what you're doing. Let's have a meeting. Let's address it. If you don't have money, well, we have to find the money through a special assessment. But we cannot allow this to sit here. And what we're being told is they were of the mindset that they had the ability and the time to let it sit for 2 years, because 2 years down the line is when the 40-year certification had to be done. Well, unfortunately, they didn't have the time. They should have acted. That building would still be standing, and almost 100 people would still be alive.
There was, is it a visual inspection? Or how?
Yes. Well, let me tell you the inspection that they had done is a visual inspection by what they call a licensed structural engineer. These are people that are licensed to do, and they know how to check. But to your question, are they boring holes or doing any kind of other type of physical inspection? No, these are the first steps are normally visual inspections done by these structural engineers, which they are very well prepared and have an eye to be able to look at what you and me may look like just a little hairline crack in a beam, but they can tell if that beam is a main load beam and whether it can cause the collapse of a building. So they're very, very, very prepared, educated, and remember, they're licensed to do this. So that's how it's normally done, visual.
Licensing doesn't exactly give me a whole lot of warm and fuzzies, but I'm not a structural engineer. I don't know how to build anything except in my dreams. But and I do some brilliant work there. Let me tell you. But I did a little research, just a little bit on the top, so that I didn't have to get too educated. But one thing I found out was when you have the type of construction you have there, the reinforced concrete, there was something about the concrete, it wasn't exactly concrete, but whatever the goop was that held it together, that there had to be a certain way it was done. It had to be so much of the dry stuff to so much of the wet stuff to make it bond properly. And that, it would seem to me, can only be done when it's being made. Maybe I'm wrong, but if I'm making a cake and I put it in the oven and it's baked and it falls apart, there's no way I know whether I put enough whatever in to make it rise properly. And I'm wondering if building a house or building a building, a structure, is somewhat similar. Did Was it inspected by someone to make sure that, yes, in fact, there was enough of a percentage of the required, you know, the goop and the other stuff to make it bond properly and hold?
Let me explain to you that. Remember, I'm not a structural engineer. I'm not a developer. I don't build buildings or homes. But I've learned enough in my 20 years. I can explain to you how the process is of when you build a new building. Of course, that when they're building it, there's a series of inspections done by the city or county, their building department. They come out and they do an inspection. They make sure that the type of steel or rebar is the correct size and the correct amount. They do take readings and calculations on what type of concrete and how strong it is, and if it's the proper content of concrete that needs to be used. So this is a science these days, and they're dictated by the building codes. So the building codes have to be followed to a T, and then, of course, the city has to come out, visually inspect it. Sometimes they do other tests, like they bore a hole into the ground and to make sure that everything's right, because this is the most important time when they're developing a building, that the inspections are done timely, correctly by the city who's supervising and approving the building of that structure. So to answer your question, Shu, so you bake a cake, you hope it comes out right, but nobody comes out to your house to make sure that you're doing the cake correctly. Here, there's so many people that are out there at a job site when they're building something that there's multiple eyes and multiple tests making sure that everything is right. So that said, so let's talk about the science of it and why physically this building fell and failed. If what I just explained to you is a process on how you build something here in Florida under the microscope of the county, of the government, and all the inspections and so forth, something failed. Something caused the problem in the building. So already the talk is that, well, was it that they overloaded the roof with weight? Another big one is that they're saying, as you know, we've had the sea rise, the tide has risen here, so these are coastal areas. There's now salt water or brackish water in our aquifer, so that means that maybe when these buildings were built 40 years ago, they dug and they put rebar and concrete into an area where there wasn't that much or any at all concentration of salt and salt water or brackish water. Nowadays, we do. There's reports that have been done showing that our water table, even in our freshwater aquifer, it's now mixed with salt. Could that have debilitated that building, you know, throughout the 40 years? Could that have been the problem? So these are questions that I can't answer. This is where the professionals, meaning people that are scientists, these people that are structural engineers, are all examining what happened. Why would that building collapse if it was built under such strict guidelines and building codes, you know, about 40 years ago? So that is still undetermined. We're still waiting to see what the science of it will come out stating that happened to it. But one thing we know that was not the science was the responsibility of the board of directors, the property manager, the association attorney, acting on it. An example, that's like if you're told by your mechanic, if you drive your car another block, your carburetor is going to give way, and you decide to drive your car and the carburetor gives up on you, you were warned. Why didn't you do something about it? Well, this is the same thing here. You were told that there were structural deficiencies, that the building could collapse. Why did you not do anything about it? Because this is very different from a car that breaks down. This is the lives of people in what they call a life safety situation, why would you not give that the attention that that needed to get at the moment it was brought to the light of the board of directors and the association? So that now is why you have all these negligence type cases being filed against that, that association. And I'm sure it'll be against the property manager will be named in that lawsuit, and so will the attorney for the association. So I hope that gives you a little more of a clear idea of what's going on and how this process works.
It does. Thank you. But I want to go back to when I first met you and when you first came on and when you were working so hard and so diligently to protect the homeowners, and I will always love you for that. You wanted to make sure that that there was a requirement for the reserves.
That's correct. And that's great. Let me tell you what I did. In 2008, I put language, so it means it became law, in a bill that I passed that made it mandatory that all condos in Florida needed to do an inspection every 5 years, especially because if you're coastal, common sense told us that, you know, that salt and salt water don't mix well with anything that got concrete or rebar or steel in it. So it was common sense. It passed unanimously back in 2008, and that would have saved the lives of these individuals, and this calamity would not have happened. What happened was in 2010, when I was leaving the legislature, they did go in and they in a very large bill, they buried it, what I call by bury, so people understand what I mean by that. They put language in a provision of a bill that never went through any of the committees that deal with condo issues. They just stuck it in somewhere. Nobody saw it. Everybody voted for the bill because it was a good bill, but nobody read that hidden in that bill was a provision removing what they had just voted for 2 years prior to do this inspection every 5 years.
Oh.
Welcome to the world of politics.
Welcome
to lobbied. That somebody was told, hey, listen, hide this in the bill. It was probably the property management companies. It could have been the law firms. But somebody got the lawmaker to do them a favor and stick in a bill that really had nothing to do with condo stuff and was never vetted by those that were the experts in condo stuff. Any chance to discuss it? Why would you want to take it out? And it was removed. And to this day, you were to call any of those people, they'll all tell you, well, we didn't know what they did. It never came through our committee. It was one of the little secret things that they do, even at the federal level, even in these funding bills.
Yes.
They're funding $1 trillion, but a billion of it may be for the senator or representative's local YMCA. You know, and you don't even know that you're voting for that. So that's how that provision was removed. Sad enough, it caused the lives of these individuals, because if not, people would have been doing these checks every 5 years. Currently, it doesn't exist. That's about to change because I'm back involved. They've asked me to help again with correcting these laws in condos, and we plan on addressing that and a number of issues that have to do when. I think no more will the building have to wait 40 years to be inspected for the first time. I believe now they're going to cut it back to 30 years, but the inspection has to start on the 25th year of the building. And they're going to mandate what they call a reserve study. So this is going to be law. What is this? This means that every 5 years, these buildings have to do a study and an inspection of the building's roof, of the structure, of the elevators, of the pool, of the all the life safety situation, meaning the alarm systems, the parking area. And what that will do is we'll let the association know if there's a potential problem, or if a roof has only got 5 years left of life, or if the elevators need to be replaced, or if the plumbing is going bad because it's cast iron. And that will then give them a chance to calculate how much money they're going to need to put away in a reserve in order to do the most important part, the maintenance of those buildings. So that is coming back. It's unfortunate it was removed, but it's coming back in the form of legislation. And I think this time it's a no-brainer, and everybody, regardless of party affiliation, will be in support of this.
One can only hope. I'm not as confident of that. But before we move on, because I'm not going to be able to keep you for very long, Julio, and you're still trying to munch on your lunch. This guy's a workaholic. Munch away.
I am.
When I come to Florida, I'm taking you out to lunch because I want to make up for this. Is that a deal? Do we have a deal?
That's a deal. And I'll let you know exactly what happened, because this is going to be one of those where I tell everybody, stay tuned and see what happens in Florida.
You know, you always have a home here, and you can always come and tell the whole world exactly what happened. But I want to talk about reserves, because everybody said they didn't have the reserves. Is there a law in Florida that associations, condos especially, must be fully funded? Their reserve accounts must be fully funded?
No, there is no law. It's quite the opposite. The law in Florida is that every year when they do the budget, because remember, a budget must be done every year along with the election. So on that day, when they do the budget, they basically let the owners, not even the board, it's the owners, decide whether they want reserves or not. And that's the way it still is as of today. So you can imagine 99.9% of all condos, the owners absolutely vote no for reserves, because that's costing them more money. That's like telling them, okay, if you vote yes, you're going to have to pay $200 more a month on top of the maintenance fee, because that's going to go into the reserve for these future projects. As I said, roofs, structural, paint, elevators, whatever it's designated for. And that money cannot be touched for your operational costs. It has to sit there for that particular purpose of what it was designated for. So that has created a big problem, Sue, because, as I told you, 99.9% of condos don't vote for it. So what happens when they don't have any reserves?
They go
through whenever there's an emergency or a need to do something, something worse happens. It's called a special assessment. So now all of a sudden they hit you with a special assessment, and they give you a certain amount of time to come up with thousands of dollars immediately so they can hurry up and get something done that needs to be done. This is what happened at Champaign. Champaign had some reserves. They did have some money. They had a good amount of money, but not what they needed to have in there in order to do all the repairs that building would require for the 40 years. So they were short. The numbers that they're throwing around, they were short probably a couple of million dollars. But what's going to happen, I believe the legislature now is going to mandate that owners can no longer vote not to have reserves. They're going to have a reserve of some type. And here is where the devil's in the details. I think that what people understand, if you ask these associations to fully fund a reserve right now of what that reserve calculation can be, the amount of money that people would have to come up with additionally on a monthly basis may put condos out of the how should I call it, out of the hands or out of the ability for the average working person to own a condo, because it's going to be extremely expensive. However, you got groups like the Association of Realtors in Florida that have come up with great ideas, and they're stating, well, don't make them fund 100%. If it's 5 years, maybe they can only put in 20% every year of what they need for that calculation that they've made. And that would make it a little more palatable and affordable for those in condos. But I definitely believe that they're getting ready to be denied the ability any longer to decide that they don't want them. They're going to mandate that they have to have something in those reserves.
You can imagine that I hear from a lot of people, and I've always been in favor of funding the reserves, because the last thing I want is to be hit with a special assessment. And I have always advocated on this show that they fund it, that they make sure the money's in there. Here's the flip side, and I'll have to admit there's a very, very good point here that they make. I've had homeowners call me, I've had them send me emails, and I've had them scream at me, literally, for saying something stupid like, make sure you fund the reserves, because who is watching the money? You keep hearing about all these embezzlement cases of all
Correct.
The money that is stolen from the homeowners. If you think that there's something funny going on with the money and you go to the police and say, could you please look into it? They'll say no, they can't, because that's private. They're not allowed to do that. It's up to you homeowners to go in and check it out. Okay, makes sense. What happens when you go in and say, I'd like to look at the money? And you're told, oh, you don't need to see that. You can't see it, which means get an attorney, spend money that you don't have to inspect the books and records, which clearly every single document says you homeowners have a right to do that. I've been yelled at by members of CAI after one of the big embezzlement cases is, what's wrong with you stupid homeowners? Why aren't you in there inspecting the books and records? And I said, and what happens when homeowners go into the office and say, I'm here to exercise my right to inspect the books and records? And you're told, get the hell out of here. You can't see them. You're not allowed to see them. And they go, oh, yeah, you're right. So there's no accountability. There's no oversight. There's no supervision. It's just throwing this money and leaving it in the hands of potentially someone who might just walk off with it.
Shu, you make a very important point. You're absolutely right. There is no confidence, I would say, in the entire state of Florida of unit owners trusting any board or any associations with any more of their money, because fraud and corruption is running rampant around the state of Florida. And unfortunately, it is happening for the reason that, try going to your local police department, which, because DBPR doesn't want it, and they can't. They don't have the ability to investigate fraud or corruption. They're more administrative stuff that's going wrong in the association. So since they don't have anywhere to go, because the local police department will tell you, what, you're an association? They'll tell you, oh, hell no. We don't have time for this.
Yeah.
We're too busy investigating
yeah.
other crimes,
yeah.
and we don't have the manpower. So what happens is these fraud, these corruption issues go undetected, or I won't say undetected, but they go unanswered. Nobody investigates. And that's why people have lost trust in giving anybody any more money, especially with a new mandated reserve or special assessment. Here comes Mr. Robina again. One of the laws that I'm pushing, and this one is getting traction like ever, we are now establishing right at this moment to implement at the same time that these mandatory reserves will come in and mandatory studies, we're creating the first ever condominium fraud task force for the state of Florida. What does that mean? That I agree with people. If I lived in a condo and I know the police won't help me, state attorney won't help me, so I know that these people get away with all this fraud, theft, and corruption and kickbacks, I would not be trusting of giving him another nickel of my money. Well, what we're hoping is to change that, because we are establishing the first ever condo fraud task force. And to make it simply explained, so that you don't have to go to your local police department and get the damn same story. I'm sorry, we're busy. We can't investigate this. Take them to court. It's a civil matter. We're creating the first ever, call it a policing. These are police officers with subpoena powers, arrest powers, that will work simply and only for associations in Florida. Meaning that now you don't have to worry about your local police department or your local state attorney. You're going to send all the proof that you think you have to the state of Florida. It'll be screened through what they call our condominium ombudsman's office. And if they find probable cause, it's going directly to the state's own condo fraud task force. Again, these are law enforcement officers. They'll come out. They will arrest you. They can take away your computer. They have subpoena power. They will have people in the offices that do audits. And we're finally going to make a dent in that fraud and corruption world, which has led to why people don't trust giving another penny to any association. So that part, that component has to be coming in at the same time that we're going to be telling Floridians, you're going to have to put more money up front because it has to go into the reserves. So we're addressing that also here in the state of Florida. And I'm very proud to tell you that I think we're about a week away from having that law written up on how that condo fraud task force of the state will function. And how the responsibilities that it'll have, that it will investigate fraud, and then it'll go to the state attorney's office after they've arrested somebody for the reason to investigate, or for the purpose of getting an arrest warrant from the state attorney once they've done all the due diligence. So there's another component of what's happening in Florida.
You are one amazing guy. Didn't you have something similar to this back when you were a legislator in the, I still can't remember what it was called.
It was, first of all, Shu, let me tell you, you got an incredible, incredible memory. I am so happy that you remember. We did do this for 1 year in the state of Florida under a pilot program, which means pilot means let's try to see if something similar to this works, and let's try it in Dade and Broward County. And I will tell you, it worked like a charm. Unfortunately, the politics kicked into play, and they didn't like that person, that ombudsman back then, because he was making the state look bad. It was making the regulatory department of the DBPR. They looked like they were useless. Here comes this newly established ombudsman's office, which I established, and they were doing this, and they were embarrassing the heck out of everyone because this guy was getting things done. Crime and corruption was coming into the light. You know what they did?
They canceled
the political
it, huh?
powers didn't like to be embarrassed at our state capitol, and they fired him. So they brought in another ombudsman, which there was a person that basically was a yes sir person and would do what they were told to do. So this is why this time the ombudsman's office is being put independently. Nobody will be as their supervisor. It will be under the Attorney General's Office of Florida. That individual will finally have subpoena powers and teeth to be able to be the one who is going to do the preliminary inspection, or call it investigation, And then if they find that there's fraud, it will go to this task force for the further steps. We're figuring this out. We're slow here in Florida, but I think finally we're figuring it out. And unfortunately, to end this conversation, it took a tragedy of people losing their lives so that the federal government started looking at this. The state government looking at this. County governments are looking at this. And even city governments or municipal governments now understand what went wrong, Mr. Robina. How do we fix this overnight? So now we're back at the table, not reinventing the wheel, trying to put back the laws, creating the enforcement arm. Because I always tell everybody, Shu, you know, we can do all the laws, create all the laws in the world we want,
but they have to be enforced.
An enforcement leg, yeah. What good are they?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what we're doing. We're adding the enforcement part to it.
I want you to come back on when it's done, and I know you will get it done because I have complete faith in you. And then I'm going to march this down every other state. There are 49 other states that need to look at what you're doing, and they need to copy what you're doing. Because
agreed.
Okay, so we're partners on that. We'll just take this around and make sure that everybody gets a chance to look at it, because this is exactly what's needed. Absent something like this, I would like to ban HOAs altogether.
And again, you know, we didn't touch much on HOAs, but you know, HOAs should be included in having the ability to use these fraud task force. So that they get some representation, because you know what happens in an HOA, since they don't have any regulatory arm here in Florida, those board members can be stealing, they could be committing fraud, kickbacks, whatever.
Yes.
And since I told you already, the police departments don't want to touch it because they don't have the manpower, you know how those are dealt with? Bunch of people have to come together, put their money together, and hire a law firm and go against that HOA through a civil matter. You can imagine how stupid that is. That really doesn't get it done.
And the alternative is you run for the board if you don't like it.
That is the most lame thing I've ever heard people say. Oh, you don't like us? Well, get rid of us.
Go ahead, run for the board.
But you also understand that brings another part up. How about all the fraud that's committed in the election process here in Florida? And let me tell you, that will become part of also which may go to the fraud task force, because you know election law is fraud, and fraud is a crime, and that would end up in the hands of the of the condo fraud task force. So good try, those who use that saying all the time, if you don't like us, get rid of us, run for the board. Yes, I wish it were that easy, but even that is manipulated and is made into a fraudulent type of process.
I did it, but I know that the CAI had to get involved in Las Vegas when there was all kinds of fraud there. The CAI actually came into Las Vegas and investigated and did some cleaning up. I didn't need the CAI. I understand.
You understand it, Ralph.
I didn't need the CAI. I managed to get on the board, and I turned things around. It was 9 board members. It was all the votes were 8-1. At the end of the first year, it was 9-0, and I had not changed my point of view or my position at all.
Which brings me to a disclaimer that I must make. I'm talking in terms of the problem communities, the corrupt boards, the corrupt, you know, property managers, and even law firms. But sure, I need to say this. The majority of our boards are honest people. Let's give credit to those who do serve on these boards as volunteers. You're a perfect example. We got great, honorable people that all they want to do is maintain the integrity of the building, look out for everyone's investment, including theirs, and make sure that things are done correctly. And kudos, and God love you, and we hope that these individuals will not take this personally, But we do have, in South Florida, I think if you were to take a percentage, we're getting close to 40, 45% of communities here have some type of fraud or corruption taking place. Luckily, the majority are still good, honest people like yourselves, which did win the election because they didn't commit any election
fraud. No. It wasn't that easy. I did not win the election, but I did get on the board. There's more than one way to skin a cat.
You got on the board, but you did the right thing. However, whether you were appointed or whatever it was.
There's more than one way to skin a cat.
Share with people what you did.
I will, but you know what? I'm going to let you go eat your lunch because I'm going to get chucked out of here. They want to come and do some work on the machine, on the equipment. So I'm going to give you a little bit of a break, but I'm going to give you a break on condition that once you've got this done, you come back on and
you
share.
You got my word.
I know I do. You're wonderful. You're wonderful. I would, I'm looking forward to it. Go enjoy your lunch, Julio. Thank you so very much.
And thank you, like always, and keep what you're doing. I know a lot of people learn a lot of things thanks to your show and what you do, Sue. So I'm blessed to be able to be on your show. Looking forward to the next one.
Anytime, just give me a buzz, and I will definitely follow up with you on this new law, and we'll get that out and let people know about it. You are amazing. Thank you so much, Julio. And ladies and gentlemen, someplace I do have my closing, but I'm so fascinated when I talk to Julio, I just lose everything. How does that happen, Julio? Go eat your dinner. Go eat your dinner.
Because we're very passionate about what we do, Sue.
I just love what you're doing. I just absolutely love what you're doing.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Julio. Take care.
Thank you.
Okay. Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect. All my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs. Life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos. Someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us
We bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us, we bought a one-way ticket to hell.